Spirit Blade Underground, episode 385. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 385.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and community you can check out at christiangeekcentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to hopefully equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out spiritblade.com. On the show today, reviews of the Supergirl TV series premiere episode. Well, my thoughts on it anyway. I wouldn't call it a review, really. And also some thoughts on the first 5 hours of Divinity Original Sin for PlayStation 4. Plus, the difference between courage and faith as we continue in the book of Hebrews. Here we go! My father once told me that I could use my powers to make a difference. He told me I had a responsibility to help others. He told me I could save this world. Save everyone. Then he told me, walk the gerbil, walk the gerbil. Frickin' weirdo.
I just finished watching Supergirl, the pilot for the new TV series, and congratulations, CBS, you guys have done it. Even though you are CBS, you have somehow figured out a way to create a show that feels exactly like a show from the CW. This was rough. Let me tell you about the things that I liked about it first. I thought that the visual effects for TV were really well done. I felt that the action to talking ratio was pretty good. I guess that's about all I can say that's good that I can think of. I really had a hard time with this one. Now, I like superhero shows and fiction and stuff like that that has all the bells and whistles and the special effects and the action and stuff like that, but I also want characters that I feel like I can relate to. And I don't mean characters that are like me and that I have things in common with, but characters that have emotional responses to situations that I can believe in, and in some way there's some analog in my life that I can relate to, you know? So maybe they're encountering a different kind of social situation than I would ever encounter, but the feeling that results from it of insecurity or fear or self-consciousness or something like that, I can relate to that, you know? On the surface, it was a very message-driven kind of show. And by that I mean it had some ideals that it wanted to put out there that it sacrificed story and character, I think, to accomplish. One of those things was a strong, female power, you know, kind of message, you know, about women being, you know, every bit as strong and powerful potentially as men. And that's a message I can get behind, you know. But when they are making it so obvious as like the central theme of the show, It gets kind of preachy. I mean, I hate watching or reading or experiencing Christian fiction, which is going to have ideas that I agree with and that obviously are going to resonate with me as a believer. I hate engaging with that kind of fiction when it's like the Supergirl pilot was, where it's like it's obviously sacrificing an engaging story in favor of some kind of a message that it wants to put out there. So whether or not I agree with the message is in this case, not really the point. It's that it's sacrificing story. And it was just peppered throughout. Like, I couldn't even, like, list off examples to you because there were just so many of, like, oh, yeah, you thought she was not going to be as powerful because she's just a girl. And, you know, I mean, it's all over the place in that pilot. What's interesting to me is that they are working so hard to put this, you know, female empowerment message in their script that I'm wondering if it's betraying a little bit of insecurity. You know, some people can take a really strong stance on something because they actually feel insecure in some way in relationship to whatever that message is. You know, maybe, you know, a strong female message is because actually, you know, maybe someone feels insecure and they feel less than. And so they feel like, you know, they really need to push strongly a message that counteracts what they're feeling, you know. And I almost wonder if there's some of that going on in the writing room or the producers or something like that because of their treatment of Superman. Superman is mentioned maybe once by name or maybe twice, once for sure. But when they refer to him, they usually say the big guy or the boy in blue or, you know, whatever like that. They try to kind of keep his name out of the picture. And it's really strange to me because in the story, Kara Zor-El in this TV series is Superman's cousin. Superman greeted her when she arrived, set her up with an adoptive family, and we never see his face, and I don't know that we ever will in this series. I'm just blown away from a story standpoint as to why Superman is not in this episode and why he would not be a recurring character, you know, every few episodes in a show like this. Because he's her cousin, you know, so when I see her, like, puzzling over things like that, you know, like her identity and, you know, who she is and who she should be, you know, I'm like, Kara, you should, or Kara, which they really make a point of, like, kind of like battling into. Some people call it Kara. The proper pronunciation, I guess, is Kara. I've heard it both ways, but I mean, they, you know, I'm thinking to myself, Kara, the only other person in the world who can relate to the specific things you're talking about being an alien and whatever, is Superman, is Clark, is Kal-El. Pick up the phone! Pick up the phone! I don't get that. And I suspect, I don't know, but I suspect, well, we've got Jimmy Olsen, who's James Olsen. Oh, cross my fingers, I want to get to that in a second. But he, I think, is basically going to be Superman's stand-in in this series. You know, she's not going to talk to Superman, she's going to talk to James Olsen instead, you know? And I feel like they're keeping Superman away because they're afraid, and this is a guess, I don't know, because they're afraid that if they bring Superman on the show, people will go, dude, Superman! Man, I'm so much more excited to see Superman than Supergirl. Man, what we really want is a Superman TV show. You know, it's like at the end of the day, like maybe they know that really what people would really rather have is a Superman TV show and not a Supergirl TV show. And so I wonder if like there's some little insecurity about that. It's like, no, we don't want to do that. We want to keep, this is a Supergirl show. We want to keep the focus on Supergirl. If we bring Superman on, people might start, you know, wanting to see him more and more, and we don't want the show to become about him. This is about Supergirl, you know? And to me, that's a sign like you haven't figured out how to make Supergirl an interesting enough character or relatable enough character. You don't trust that the character you're giving us is going to stand, you know, next to Superman and still leave the audience wanting her and wanting her story instead of Clark's story. So, and I don't think they have created a character here that's super interesting. You know, one thing that was really, you know, none of these characters react in the ways that I would expect people to if they were in anything remotely like the situations that they're in, you know. And one example of that that's really strange is Kara is 13 years old when she leaves Krypton. And in the scene at the beginning when we see her leaving, you know, she was like telling her mother, you know, I won't fail, you know, Kal-El, I won't fail you. She was like putting on this brave face. She was this very commanding 13-year-old. And then off she goes in the rocket. She does seem a little bit, you know, like she has to kind of will herself to do it, you know. But she's not like, Mom! I mean, she's not like weeping because her planet's about to be destroyed. She's never going to see her parents again. I'm like, wow, she is freaking hard as nails, this girl. And then the next time we see her, she's like a bumbling 20-something that's totally insecure, and I'm like, what went wrong? What horrible parents did Clark choose for you that you went from this strong 13-year-old girl who was stoic in the face of her planet's and parents' death? What happened to, must have been something in the Phantom Zone that screwed her up. So there's just all kinds of things that the characters do and act, the way they act, it doesn't make any sense to me. Okay, James Olsen, let's talk about that. So Jimmy Olsen is brought from Metropolis. He's a main character in this series. And this is where, just a prime example of the CW-ness of this CBS TV series. I was like, you know, Jimmy Olsen, he's like that overly eager, you know, kind of geeky kid photographer from the Daily Planet, but I guess not at all anymore. Now he comes here and is like, I'm James Olsen. Yeah, I'm James now. Just my mom and the big guy call me Jimmy. I'm James. And I smile and I pose and I know what I'm doing. Oh, man, really? The other big theme that I was seeing in this is this self-actualization theme. The greatest good, the highest goal that someone ought to have is to be who they are naturally, you know? And that was seen in a number of lines and just the general feel of the show. It's like she's been hiding who she is and she wants to, like, kind of come out of the closet, as it were, you know? And there's even, like, a kind of like a pro-lesbian statement very briefly in there, you know? So, I mean, that kind of feeling of just be who you naturally tend to be is a very strong theme, I think, in this show. In a message from her mother, from Krypton, she hears her mother say, "There is no correct path in life." Really? Okay. Well, then, like, frickin' take over the world, Kara. Just, like, rape and pillage and just have a ball, because there's no correct path in life. Okay. Always be true to yourself. That's the same as, like, follow your heart, do what feels right. It's the same thing as, you know, there is no correct path in life, so always be true to yourself. What does that mean? What does that mean other than just do what you want to do and just be who you naturally are? You know, I think Jeffrey Dahmer was probably being who he naturally was. I think Adolf Hitler was probably being who he naturally was. I think when we just default and pursue being who we naturally are, and then of course, believe in yourself. Believe in yourself. Okay, and you know, there's some worth to that, but if we set these kinds of slogans up as, like, our highest values in life, then we are on a path to disaster. What I would love to see is a TV show, and I think this would especially be appropriate in a superhero TV show or a superhero movie, is someone who actually wants to be better than they are. They want to be more virtuous than they are. They want to rise above their selfishness and their natural tendencies, and they want to be something greater. They recognize the flaws in their character, and they're like, I don't want to be this person that I naturally am. I want to be something better. I want to pursue something greater. I want to pursue selflessness instead of just looking inside and saying, who am I? I'm just going to let that tiger out, you know? Yeah, I'm not going to watch this one again. More particularly, I would just need to, like, hear that there's some big changes in the tone of the show. Because I don't need another Flash. Flash is already kind of difficult for me to get through in order to have those little savory golden moments that it has. I think Limitless, another CBS show, oddly enough, is the best superhero show on television right now. It's got some trappings of the superhero genre. You've got a guy who's kind of like, he's got some superpowers, but yet he's keeping secrets from everybody, and during the day, he's kind of like fighting crime and stuff, you know? There's no costumes or code names, but I would say Limitless is actually, for my tastes, the most compelling, interesting, just best quality superhero show on television. So maybe go watch Limitless instead of Supergirl, if anything that I've said connects with you. Otherwise, hey, if you're able to enjoy Supergirl, my hat's off to you. I'm jealous. I'm jealous of all the people that got to enjoy Smallville for all the years that it was on, and I couldn't stomach more than like 1.5 episodes of that show, and I so wanted a good Superman show, a good superhero show of any kind. And all these other people got to enjoy it, and I didn't. So enjoy Supergirl if able. That's it for me.
I want to remind you guys to check out the other members of the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, the Untold podcast, and POSTOS. For more information about the CGC network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
This time I'm taking a look at Divinity Original Sin. I'm totally down for a straight-up turn-based RPG. I'm hoping this one will be just the thing for me to veg on my couch to. Okay, difficulty selection. Prefer story and exploration over being challenged in combat? I'm going to do explorer mode, but I'm hoping that if the combat's too easy, I can switch it mid-game to classic mode. We'll see. Dude, there are like a ton of character class options. Holy crap. This is too much, but awesome for a second playthrough, I'm sure. I'll just stick to the starting spells they give me. Really? Bald is not one of my choices? You give me a bald portrait, but I can't choose bald as one of my... That's weird.
Oh!
Alright, combat in Divinity Original Sin is played in rounds. Everything you do in combat costs action points, which you receive each round. Your turn ends when you have no AP left, okay? Oh, that's much better. Okay, so I can go and hunt him down with the left stick and select him that way, or I can just cycle through enemies with the left and right button. That's a lot cooler. Nice. And the text could be just a little bit larger. The interface is just taking a little bit of getting used to, but I'm starting to understand what they're getting at. It'd be nice if we shared a common inventory. It's a little clunky having to hand everything over this way. Nice. Take a shot. Oh, man. So I didn't quite have line of sight or something? I feel like I have to kind of rehearse a little bit some of the controls. You can get where you want in the menus, but it's just a matter of, okay, so I have to hit left L2, and that brings up my options for my guys, and then I use the left stick to point to the guy that I want, but then I need to let go of L2 to switch. Like, I can't let go of the left stick and it'll work. So the sequence is, for switching guy, is L2, left stick, release L2. L2, left stick, release L2. So there's just a few sequences like that, like pulling up this menu with the right trigger and then using left to go where I want and then release right trigger to go into that menu. It'll just take, you know, I have crappy hand-eye coordination, so they, you know, there's accessibility to all the menus I think that I want. I just kind of have to get my hands used to the sequence. Okay, if I want to switch, there's not just one button to push to switch to a new guy. That would be nice if it was just one of these bumper buttons to cycle through who I wanted to be, but instead I gotta go L2, left stick, release L2. L2, left stick, release L2. Which I'm sure will become natural pretty quickly, I hope.
I met a trio of strange cult-like figures before the entrance of this tomb. They seemed to have a precious stone in their possession.
Your tricks will not save you from retribution, deceiver.
Okay.
Do it. Boom! That was cool. Oh, nice. That was awesome. Oh, cool. Okay, I'm starting to see how the combat can really move at a pretty brisk pace with the L1 and R1 buttons allowing you to cycle through the enemies that you're targeting. You can just go, you know, cycle, you know, select attack, you know. And so despite it being a pretty tactical game, if you know what you want to do, you can cycle through things cycle through combat pretty quickly.
I still remember the days when your kind swung from branches and plucked the vermin out of their neighbor's fur.
Okay, some more macro-evolutionary speech in geek gaming and entertainment. No shocks there. I wish I had some dialogue options that were just a little bit darker, had a little bit more of an attitude. I want, like, the get-out-of-my-way option here. This is a cooperative dialogue. It allows you to roleplay discussions between the two main characters.
I don't need an escort, especially not a drunken one. Back off or face me.
Are you mad? You'd kill legionnaires. Let's just go to the wizard peacefully.
Whoa. Is Eldorast not my guy too? That's not what Eldorast would say. Win a series of rock, paper, scissors matches to convince the other party.
It was a wicked thing we did.
Do I need to change his AI? I thought I made them both the same personality type, so I don't know why Eldorast is acting all holier than thou and sensitive.
He should be just as cold and heartless as Vincent is.
Maybe I should just roleplay as him for a while. Bring out his heartless side myself. The menus are just slightly slow to respond. I would like to be cycling through these steps of opening, grabbing, closing, you know, a little bit faster, and they're just a little bit slow to respond. Ooh, that was cool. Oh, wow, I can quick save in the middle of combat. That's cool.
There are a few things like the portraits during dialogue. It would be nice if all the little details were just enlarged just a little bit.
All right, now one of the things that drew my attention to this game from the very beginning was the potential for it to work well via remote play on the Vita. So let's see how that works out. Huh. Okay. It appears that I'm not able to access the right and left trigger functionality using the back touchpads on the Vita. I just exited out of the game and tried a different game to make sure that it wasn't a problem with my Vita, but no, the back touchpad functionality for right and left trigger working just fine on the Mad Max video game, but I come back to this and it's not even registering in this game that I'm using the right and left trigger via the back touchpad. Which basically destroys the entire functionality of this game on Vita. Now, whether or not that's unique to my experience, I'd be very curious to know. If there's someone out there watching this and you are not having the same problem, I'd love to hear from you. Or if you are having the same problem, be good to know. That's a real shame, because this, in so many ways, is the kind of game that you could really enjoy on a Vita, since it's not all twitchy. I do wish my characters could move a little bit faster. When your camera angle is so often above the action like this, at least for me, it can kind of take me out of the potential intensity of exploring the environment. I feel kind of removed from it already. And so if you add a slow pace to that, then at the end of a hard day of work, you know, this isn't the kind of game I'm probably going to just kind of veg out to. It's one that's going to require me to be a little bit more awake and alert and have mental energy to really dedicate to focusing on it.
Intervention of fate. Yes.
Oh man.
Fate has put me on this very spot, so I may tell you all about a most intriguing opportunity indeed.
Oh my gosh. Okay, the voice acting. I really like the voice acting in terms. I mean, it's quality voice acting, but I'm just getting a little bit impatient. I'm kind of like, okay, let's hurry this along. And so I kind of want to read ahead. I think what I'll probably do is turn off the voice acting so that I can get through the text a little bit faster. I appreciate that they went to the trouble of putting voice acting in so much of the game with the enhanced edition. But a lot of times I'm just not going to be patient enough to enjoy it. I don't like how they're kind of like taking control of the role-playing of these characters when I'm not directly controlling them. The AI personality type I chose for him was Judge, which maybe I thought, maybe that means he was going to be a little bit more obsessed with justice. I don't know. I wasn't sure what the whole AI choice was, but I'm guessing that's what's affecting this right now, and now I'm regretting that I chose Judge for both of them.
I disagree. I, for one, am content with my station.
No, you're not content with your station, Vincent. You crave power, just like Eldorass does. I have no idea, even if he's like someone that's concerned with justice, maybe that's what the Judge AI was for, that wouldn't mean he would necessarily be content with his station. Maybe as a judge or someone who cares about justice, he's like frickin' Batman and wants to take it upon himself to bring about justice. That's almost a game breaker for me to twice in a row have their AI-controlled version of one of my characters screw up my intended role-playing plans. Because I can't imagine wanting to invest my time in 60, 40, even 20 hours of a role-playing game if I'm not going to be allowed to make the choices that I want to make. I mean, that's the whole point of a freaking role-playing game! Okay, so I just did some research on this, and actually I didn't have to go any further than my logbook here. Looking under tutorial, it says AI personality determines if your character has an opinion of his or her own, meaning they will make certain dialogue decisions without your input. If you're not sure, leave it on no AI. Now, it sure is possible that something, this message popped up when I was generating my character. I don't remember that at all. But either way, don't make the same mistake I did. If you want to actually make choices in Divinity Original Sin, choose no AI. Once I'm done recording, you better believe I'm starting back from scratch, brand new characters, because I don't see any way here for me to change that about my character, change their AI options. None of that is in here. Oh, this is interesting. I've just run into some kind of religious guy by the name of Francis, who's telling me about his religious beliefs, and he says, by following her instructions, this being the goddess that he worships, and becoming initiated into the One Way, we can each of us live on for a span greater than the number of stars that twinkle within the goddess's right eye. Now, this is interesting, because what he's suggesting here is something that is exclusively true. And the claims of the Bible, the claims of Christianity, say that they are exclusively true. Now, that doesn't mean that that there's not truth found in other belief systems, but what it does mean is where other belief systems, other truth claims conflict with what the Bible teaches, those other truth claims are incorrect and the Bible is correct and reliable. And that kind of worldview, this kind of the idea that truth is exclusively, you know, absolute and not relative, is very unpopular. And so I'm wondering, as I continue conversing with this guy, if he's going to be portrayed negatively in some way. That's usually the case when you have a character that believes that truth is exclusive when it comes to religious matters. They're usually portrayed as arrogant or mean-spirited or rude or hypocritical or something like that. So this is the first example, and especially in fantasy. I mean, that's like, especially if there's like an organized church, usually there's a very negative connotation for that, anybody associated with that belief system. So we'll see as we move forward what this guy's like. All right, so tell me about yourself. What's in a name, dear friend? For we all begin equal in the conduit's eyes, and only through great deeds may enter into her inner ring. That's interesting. So we all start out as equal in the conduit's eyes, but it's a works-based system. I think a lot of people have the impression that in Christianity, being good is what gets you into the presence of God for eternity. And actually, it's the reverse. It's just acknowledging, you know what? You are a holy God, and you're creating a perfect eternity, and I am clearly not compatible with that. I need you to forgive me and rescue me and make me compatible with a perfect, wonderful, flawless existence for all of eternity. So Christianity is really, to my knowledge, the one worldview, the one religious worldview that is not based on works and being good, getting you into the presence of God. So tell me more about this conduit. She came from on high to we mortals and showed us the path to the goddess, where all living souls are naturally inclined. Okay, so this is something that's in common with Christianity. Jesus came from on high, we might say, and showed us the path to Yahweh, the God of the Bible. The big question is this conduit actually synonymous with God, or is she something lesser? Usually when they riff on Christianity in some form, or the Trinity in some form, there's like God, and then there's like, they don't do a straight-up riff on the Trinity. They would make the analogs of the Son and the Holy Spirit kind of lesser versions of God or something. She showed us that injury and malady need not mark the end of life, but that through her methods, so through deeds, we could ascend to greater life in service of the goddess. So again, it's very works-based, as opposed to the Gospel's promise that, no, listen, I did this for you, Jesus says. Just trust me to take care of this, to forgive you, to deal with your sin. I am the rescuer, you know. That's what a savior is. It's one who rescues. Ooh, he's walking. Oh, sneaking failed. Never mind. Hey, I'm not doing anything. Okay, now here's a conversation I just had with someone who is now just joined my party after rescuing her. She says, Source Hunter, I have heard tales both grand and terrible about the world of humans. I myself was caged one moment and freed the next by our kind. Perhaps in time I will come to know my own kind as you have, and perhaps then I will decide for myself whether ours is a noble kind. So, again, we've got an example of fantasy as a genre being used to explore some of these deeper issues of humanity. Who we are. Are we basically good? Are we basically evil? What does that even mean to say basically? I'll be interested to see kind of where this goes and the worldview that the writers of the game purposefully or unwittingly present to us. Okay, I'm kind of getting a sense of how the quest log works, and I like it. And turning off the voice acting, too, allows me to kind of get through dialogue a little bit faster as I kind of skim through what they're saying. Talk, talk, boom, hit the bullet points, get the quest log updated, and then I'll just refer to the quest log. I really do enjoy reading, but when I sit down to play a video game, I'm there to interact with a world, not to kind of be a passive reader. Ah, foo on you, Vincent!
I'll not only dig up this grave, but bury you inside it, too! Bite me! Yes, I win! We'll do as I say. Now shut up and dig up this grave!
Oh, dang! Holy crap! Your party has been defeated.
We'll save often if you plan on digging up graves.
Alright, well, I've reloaded my game. I tried to get the blonde-haired lady to join the group again, but this time my AI-controlled Vincent didn't like the idea, so guess that's not happening. Select no AI. I'm getting the hang of the menus and the user interface. It was a little slow going at first, but I'm starting to kind of get into a groove with this. Whoa! Oh, crap! What the crap just happened?
What happened? Is this a dream? I don't think so. That stone, somehow it sent us flying into the stars.
Yeah, the voice options were not super varied in this. They might have all been done. There was like a fighter, a rogue, and maybe a wizard voice option for each sex. And I think they were all done by the same person, and they weren't really drastically different. All right, there's been a lot of talking here. I wouldn't mind some combat again. Okay, now the forced AI of Eldorast says, no matter how improbable, anything is possible. If the Weaver tells the truth, we have some serious work ahead of us. Now that's true, no matter how improbable, well, I'm not sure that's true actually, that not literally everything is possible. I understand what people mean, but for example, you know, something cannot be A and not A at the same time. It is either A or it is not A. So not anything is possible, but I understand what we generally mean by that expression. No matter how improbable, anything is possible. Even so, I think that what we ought to be basing our life decisions on is what is most probable, what is most plausible. And yet sometimes we can avoid what's true by giving ourselves an alternative and telling ourselves that that alternative is possible. Well, it's possible that this, but what we don't really acknowledge is that, you know, that's just something that we kind of want to believe, that's something we want to pursue, when really, at the end of the day, what we ought to be reacting to and what we ought to be allowing to guide our lives is what is most likely to be true given all of the available information. Ha ha! Ow. Oh! You don't seem to be doing that well. Flee by using the flee skill on your hotbar. I say, zap him! One more shot! We got him! Booyaka! Okay, so I've spent about 5 hours with the game now, and it started off a little bit slow as I was just trying to figure out how to interact with the game, but I'm getting into a rhythm with it, and I'm starting to enjoy it. Combat is starting to speed up despite being turn-based, and on the lowest difficulty setting, it's providing me with kind of that casual exploratory experience that I want, where it doesn't have to be deeply tactical, and these days, in the season of life I'm in, I don't want that at the end of the day. This game is far from blowing my mind. It's far from the kind of experience that I will be just chomping at the bit at the end of a workday to get back into. But it does scratch a number of itches that I tend to have when it comes to RPG gaming. So yeah, I'm absolutely going to keep playing this one.
Data collection complete. Activating MusicNet 1.0.
Okay, guys, well, episode 7 of Star Wars is coming up and coming up fast, and it's a growing tradition on this podcast for me to have a sit-down conversation via phone or Skype with an uber fan of a particular kind of franchise or property when a big profile movie featuring that property comes out. We've done Lord of the Rings and Star Trek with a couple of experts in our community, super fans of those properties, and now I want to sit down and talk with one of you guys about Star Wars. I'm going to do my review of it first, but I'd like to schedule for like maybe mid-January a conversation with somebody that's willing to have one with me and have it recorded to plan the podcast just talking about Star Wars, you know, maybe thinking back to what your thoughts and hopes were leading into the movie, and then of course what your thoughts were after having finally seen it. So if you like consider yourself like, I am a freaking uber Star Wars fan, and you want to represent Star Wars fandom on this podcast, then please let me know. Email me at paeter@spiritblade.com, and hopefully we'll be able to schedule a conversation between you and I that everyone else can just whatever enjoy, right? That's, of course, we want people to enjoy it. That's right. Man, well, if I'm on this kind of roll, sorry guys. All right, here we go. Extra Life. I just want to remind you guys, it's coming up next week, the big marathon, but if this is your first time hearing about it, quick rundown. In participation with the Extra Life charity event, Christian Geek Central is raising funds to provide urgent medical care for children whose parents can't otherwise afford it. There is still time, believe it or not, to join our team, even at the last minute. Last year, people joined the day of the marathon. Some people, a couple weeks after, because technically the fundraising can continue through the rest of the calendar year. If you're unable though to join the team, we want to make donating easy and fun by offering some incentives. So Matt McKinney of POSTOS is offering multiple incentives for supporting his fundraising efforts. For $25, Matt will apply deep cutting commentary to a Star Trek or Smallville episode of your choice. For $35, he'll do a Star Trek movie or a two-parter of any Star Trek series or the Smallville series. And for $50, you can co-host an episode of POSTOS along with Matt and off-screen Kim, excuse me. I had the chance to do that last year and had a lot of fun with that. David N. Alderman of the Crossover Alliance Publishing Company is offering up a digital copy of the first Crossover Alliance anthology to anyone who donates toward his fundraising goal. A great way to sample the Crossover Alliance authors. If you're not aware of this, this is a new publishing company that focuses on really edgy, gritty, you know, intense Christian fiction that like is a little too intense for the mainstream Christian publishers. So if that kind of thing appeals to you, go check out their website and then donate to David Alderman's fundraising efforts at ChristianGeekCentral.com. Finally, I'm setting myself up once again to sing a song or play a game of your choice during my Extra Life live stream. If you're among the first 5 people to donate $25 or more toward my, or actually now, any CGC team members' fundraising efforts. As it is right now, I've met my personal fundraising goal of $100, but our team is at 35% of their complete combined goal. And that's a really good start, but we really want to crush that. And I think as a community, if we all come forward and donate just a little bit, we can just totally squash the crap out of that $500 goal. So we're currently at 35% as I record this. Please consider donating at ChristianGeekCentral.com. Speaking of that live stream coming up, mark your calendar again for Saturday, November 7th from 6 a.m. to 6 a.m. Pacific. That's 6 a.m. is when I'm going to start that 24-hour video gaming marathon. You can tune in, of course, anytime. Guys, you're crazy if you watch the entire time. Let me just tell you that. You're crazy. But tune in anytime, 6 a.m. to 6 a.m. starting Saturday, November 7th, 6 a.m. Pacific. 8 a.m. Pacific is specifically when I'm going to be fulfilling donor requests for like the songs and the games that those who donate $25 or more to any team member, the first 5 anyway. So those donor requests, the humiliating songs, and the potentially horrible games, I'm going to be playing those at 8 a.m. Pacific. And that's at ChristianGeekCentral.com and twitch.tv/ChristianGeekCentral. The marathon will feature a wide variety of games from consoles past and present, and also possibly a mental breakdown during the last 2 to 3 hours, if last year's any indication. A new feature of the stream this year, guys, is my +2 page of many topics, which I will periodically roll dice and look at to decide what I should blab about next. So leave your your topic suggestion in the comments or email me at paeter@spiritblade.com to help me fill out some dead air during the marathon, and I may just blab about your topic during the stream. Controversial and complex or pointless and strange, all suggestions are welcome, so please send them my way. So to learn more about this event, to join our team, or donate, visit, I mean, really, the destination for everything is ChristianGeekCentral.com. Well, not everything in the cosmos, but you know what I mean. Then join me and the Christian Geek Central community on November 7th as we continue to geek out and seek the truth. I shouldn't have done that. That's supposed to wait till the end of the podcast, but I'm reading from the script that I used to make the video. Sorry, guys. Anyway, okay, go to youtube.com/ChristianGeekCentral if you want to see some video content and not featured on this podcast, like part 5 and 6 of the Retro live stream. Those are up now, and also my reaction to the Supergirl premiere if you want to see all my visual passion and disgust and whatever else I was feeling. And then plus my Divinity Original Sin video should be up now, in which you'll get to see me actually playing the game instead of just listening to me. And also I throw up on the text, via text on the screen, some scripture references to go along with some of the points that I was making. So there you have it. Reminder, guys, I want your voice and your interest to be a part of this podcast and Christian Geek Central. So whether you've got an idea for a segment already, or you just want to be a part of the fun, we want to find a way to plug you in and let your voice be heard. Also a great way to promote what you're doing if you want. For more info, email me at paeter@spiritblade.com.
The truth will set you free.
Truth is that which corresponds to fact or reality. To assert that truth is not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. Now, lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. You'd be amazed what you can learn if you spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
In this segment, I attempt to examine the Bible and dissect some of the churchy language that we often take for granted, digging into history and languages when I'm able to try and get at the heart of the text so we can hopefully see and apply some of what God has for us in these words today. Now, I'm not formally trained in scripture, just a guy using resources and a questioning mind to try and get at the truth, and you can do that too, so I hope you'll do that with me. This time, we're looking at Hebrews chapter 11, verse 29. In the ESV, it says, "By faith, the people crossed the Red Sea as on dry land, but the Egyptians, when they attempted to do the same, were drowned." The author of Hebrews just used Moses as an example of faith in action and now broadens the topic to include many others, beginning with here the Israelite people who left Egypt and crossed the Red Sea after Yahweh parted the waters. For the full background on this bit of commentary, I think we should look at Exodus chapter 14, verses 10 through 14, and verses 19 through 31. So bear with me for just a minute here so we can get the background here and try to get some context for what the author of Hebrews is drawing out of this event. So that text in Exodus says, "When Pharaoh drew near, the people of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they feared greatly. And the people of Israel cried out to Yahweh. They said to Moses, 'Is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us in bringing us out of Egypt? Is not this what we said to you in Egypt? Leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians. For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness.' And Moses said to the people, 'Fear not. Stand firm and see the salvation of Yahweh, which he will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall never see again. Yahweh will fight for you, and you have only to be silent.' Then the angel of God who was going before the host of Israel moved and went behind them, and the pillar of cloud moved from before them and stood behind them, coming between the host of Egypt and the host of Israel. And there was the cloud and the darkness, and it lit up the night without one coming near the other all night. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and Yahweh drove the sea back by a strong east wind all night and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. And the people of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, the waters being a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. The Egyptians pursued and went in after them into the midst of the sea, all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. And in the morning watch, Yahweh, in the pillar of fire and of cloud, looked down on the Egyptian forces and threw the Egyptian forces into a panic, clogging their chariot wheels so that they drove heavily. And the Egyptians said, 'Let us flee from before Israel, for Yahweh fights for them against the Egyptians.' Then Yahweh said to Moses, 'Stretch out your hand over the sea, that the water may come back upon upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots, and upon their horsemen. So Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its normal course when the morning appeared. And as the Egyptians fled into it, Yahweh threw the Egyptians into the midst of the sea. The waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen. Of all the host of Pharaoh that had followed them into the sea, not one of them remained. But the people of Israel walked on dry ground through the sea, the waters being a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. Thus Yahweh saved Israel that day from the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Israel saw the great power that Yahweh used against the Egyptians, so the people feared Yahweh, and they believed in Yahweh and in his servant Moses. All right, well, the generation of Israelites who left Egypt were not known for their faith. In fact, there are numerous examples of their lack of faith in Yahweh that resulted in terrible consequences for them. Even before reaching the wilderness, they expressed doubt in Yahweh, despite having just seen a spectacular series of handcrafted plagues that harmed the Egyptians but didn't touch the Israelites. And although crossing the parted sea involved faith in Yahweh, they had just seen God's angel and pillar of cloud/fire protect them from the Egyptian forces, not to mention the fact that the parted sea was clearly a miracle. So with God's presence so obvious and a huge helping of doubt being in the mix, why does the author of Hebrews point to this moment as a noteworthy instance of faith put into action? Well, I suspect that he may be using this event to distinguish between faith in Yahweh and courage. Now, courage is a good thing, but it can be summoned up even from sinful motives, such as pride or hatred. Although it probably took courage for Israel to walk through the middle of the parted sea, the Egyptians following them had enough courage to do that too. But their courage wasn't pleasing or impressive to God. They were out to do evil, and God swallowed them up in the water. By contrast, Israel trusted in Yahweh through the parted waters. They trusted in Yahweh, not their own capability. Trust in Yahweh is also something that is noteworthy to God, even in small measures. Yes, Israel had a ton of good reasons to believe in Yahweh, and their faith was probably aided by what God had recently done for them, but even a little faith is significant and something that God can use in powerful ways. Luke 17:6, Jesus says, "And the Lord said, if you had faith like a grain of mustard seed, you could say to this mulberry tree, be uprooted and planted in the sea, and it would obey you." So what's in all this for geeks? Well, science fiction is filled with humanistic philosophy that emphasizes the potential and capability of humans. As recently as Tomorrowland, we see that. And of course, in classic Star Trek. I can't count how many times the ultimate solution in a geek movie has been to believe in yourself. As geeks, many of us struggle with self-doubt. And so themes of self-actualization and self-confidence, they can have an appeal for us. And while choosing to force down our fear and doubt through sheer willpower can result in some positive forward motion in life, it can only take us so far. Eventually, we hit our limit. We know deep down that we are only so strong, so smart, and so capable. So if we rely on our own capability, we will only accomplish so much. On top of that, what we do accomplish is likely to have a sense of wrongful pride attached to it. But when we trust that Yahweh is both perfectly good and infinitely powerful, we can step beyond our limits. In the last few years, I've seen God increasingly position me to be useful to other people in ways I never could have orchestrated. And it seems to correlate with my own increasing recognition of my limits. It seems to almost come in proportion to my willingness to say, "Jesus, I can't do this. And it's going to hurt if I try. But I know you're good, and you can do this. So here I go. I'm just going to do this until you stop me." Faith is not about willing yourself to be courageous. It's about trusting in who Yahweh is as a person, trusting that he's both good and strong enough for the situation at hand. That trust can result in courage, but the trust itself is what God wants for us and what often makes it possible for him to use us in some really powerful ways. Trusting God is still hard, though. I mean, I'm terrible, terrible at leaps of faith. But so is Israel, and yet God still honors what little faith they had here. So maybe you can't take, the big leap of faith in front of you, but maybe there's a lesser version of that leap you can move into instead of going nowhere. Maybe just a step of faith, a shuffle, a pivot of faith. Whatever measure of faith you have, there's a way to put it into action. And when we do that, we actually bring pleasure to the God of the universe and then get to watch and see what he does. Who knows? There could be a massive body of water in front of you. He wants to split right down the middle. If you're willing to trust that, he might actually do it. Feedback, feedback. Give me your thoughts on this podcast, Christian Geek Central, the YouTube channel, or anything else we're doing. What should we keep? What should we change? What's on your mind you'd like a potentially uninformed opinion on? We want to make this show and all of Christian Geek Central as fun and useful as we can, but we have to hear from you to do that. You can send me an email at paeter@spiritblade.com. Well, stay tuned for Farscape Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 310 if you want to start from the beginning. Next week, if God wants it to happen, there will be no podcast, but that Extra Life 24-hour live stream is going to happen. It's starting at 6 a.m. Saturday, November 7th, again at ChristianGeekCentral.com and twitch.tv/ChristianGeekCentral. And then this podcast will be back again, if that's what God wants to happen, the week after with my thoughts on Fallout 4. Oh my gosh. I'm going to pee my pants, and I do a little dance. Till then, check out SpiritBlade.com and Christian Geek Central for more stuff made just for you. Thank you so much for making time for this show, guys. I hope you have a great week, and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Frampton with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.com. Thank you for listening.
Prepare for immediate starburst.
All right, just finished up episode 409, season 4 of Farscape. This is not a great episode to me. This is one of the saving graces of the episode is that it begins to what looks like heal the relationship, or at least restore a little bit of connection between John and Aaron. If you haven't seen this one in a while, they've just elected to enter Tormented Space, because that's apparently a big nexus for wormholes. And Tormented Space is supposed to be this big, scary place. And, oh, boy, it can be, you know, John says, it can't be worse than what we've been through. And, you know, Aaron said at the end of last episode, yes, it can, very dramatically. But what we have here, and in this episode, certainly, and I think in the episodes that follow, I don't really remember Tormented Space being any worse. It felt like this kind of artificial, like, thing that they made up to try and make us feel like, ooh, things are going to start getting really intense. But what we see in this episode is a planet like any other planet they've been to. It's also a very Far Trek-y episode in that you could basically skip this one, you know? There's a little bit of advancement, or at least sustaining of some plot threads. You know, Chiana's got her vision power that causes her to be blind, and you might remember that she gained that power. We can source it back to the interaction she had with that other dimensional creature or whatever that kind of possessed her for a while. The Rider, I think it was called. And so that's continuing on. But otherwise, you've got a story that is kind of hard to follow. And part of that is because the first half of it, they're showing you the same events multiple times from different perspectives. It's kind of a bit of a whodunit, you know. They're on this planet, and the upcoming leader, new leader, they change leadership every 6 months or something like that, gets assassinated by Aaron. And what we learn is that there's a guy that was working for, I guess, the current prefect or something that was going to be replaced. I'm not sure. Who could make these bugs come out of like a weird organic beehive he has growing out of the side of his head. And when those bugs bite people, he can control them through whatever they inject in those people. So he was using John and Aaron, trying to use them, Aaron specifically, to kill the upcoming prefect and try to start war and blah, 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 blah.
Meanwhile, Sokozu is getting, like, I want to say romantically entangled with the upcoming prefect's son, effectively the prince. And it's so weird because it's like out of the blue, it's like suddenly they're like having this pseudo, well, not a pseudo-sexual, it is a sexual encounter. I mean, they're not having intercourse, but I mean, clearly she's got some clothes off, you know, and he's, you know, checking her out and stuff, you know. And I'm just like, where did this come from? I mean, you would expect that of Chiana, but this is kind of a strange turn for Sokozu. And you don't know how this relationship developed. There are several moments in this where, you know, you could tell if you're watching it, well, of course you're watching it at this point on DVD or Blu-ray, you know, they'll have these commercial breaks. And there's in the script, I kind of want to watch this again, see if there's any deleted scenes or something, because I feel like, they'll cut to a commercial, and then when they come back from the commercial break, the plot has moved forward, and there's just like a missing gap. Like, stuff happened during that commercial break, and it's unclear how they get from A to B in several instances in this episode, you know. It's very just kind of a strange episode, you know. Now what I do like about it, I like Bruce Spence, who played the train man in the Matrix Revolutions, and also played Zed in the terrible Sword of Truth series. He was the one great thing about it. I thought his Zed in that series was a fantastic interpretation of the character in the books. So, you know, I enjoyed seeing him, but his character wasn't all that spectacular. I liked the concept of the guy with the bees coming out of his head, and I liked the ugly, nasty priest floating around. He reminded me of Guato, something like that. I can't remember. Quato? Whoever the guy is that has a baby coming out of his chest in the Arnold Schwarzenegger Total Recall movie, he reminds me of that guy. It's just kind of nasty, you know. And we've seen kind of creepy, small, childlike aliens before on this show, and so this one wasn't totally out of left field, but it was still kind of a neat, creepy design, and so I enjoyed that. So in many ways, the Henson Creature Shop still, you know, just all the different, you know, the little like standard, the things that we've, you know, accepted now as standard for Farscape, still make this, you know, more interesting visually, anyway, more interesting television than, you know, any sci-fi that I can think of on average, you know, even up to this point. I can't think of another sci-fi show that had as much visually in terms of costumes and makeup and stuff going on in an episode than, you know, than this episode. And this was just a pretty standard episode in that regard. But, you know, I still have to give props to Farscape for doing that. But as a Farscape episode compared to what we've seen, compared to what it could be, I think this just totally biffs it as an episode. Yeah, it was very disappointing. So I think it was impressive the first time because I was just trying to figure out what the crap is going on. But now I'm like, okay, I've seen this like 4 to 6 times before. I can't remember how many times, you know. And I still feel like there are gaps in the story, in the plot. Really weird. So anyway, but we'll see what happens with the next episode. What is the next episode? I have no idea. Oh, Coup by Clam. I have no idea which episode that is. All right, we'll find out next time.